Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is David Cooks, and we will be talking about his new book, Getting Undressed, From Paralysis to Purpose. At the age of 15, high school sophomore and basketball player David Cooks experienced a spinal aneurysm, leaving him a T6 paraplegic. Refusing to let the wheelchair determine the man, he made the decision to persevere from the very beginning, and he never let go of his passion for the game. In Getting Undressed, David describes his journey to independence and purpose, and how, quote, getting undressed for change can pose huge challenges, both literally and figuratively. It's a story of inspiration and motivation. David shares his struggles and successes on and off the court with honesty, perseverance, and faith. For more information, you can visit his website, which is www.davidcooksspeaks.com, and I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome David to the show. Good day, David. Oop, it looks like my studio is acting kind of slow here. Hold on, folks. One moment. My updates for this. Let me just refresh my screen. Sorry about that, folks. Sometimes technology is helpful, and other times it can be a real challenge there. So just give me one moment. Let me go ahead and get David in here. Okay, there. Do I have you there, David?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can now. I apologize for that. The sometimes the screen just doesn't react when I tell it to. So
technology is always,
it's good when it works, but it can be a challenge when it doesn't, for sure. So I'm really happy to have you with me today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. I'm excited.
Great, thanks. So, we have a lot to unpack here. So, I guess the first thing is maybe if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit of the backstory of, you know, your experience at the age of 15, and kind of, you know, what happened, and, you know, just take us back to that time and kind of how you felt. Just the impact that it made on you at that particular time.
Yeah, I was. I loved playing basketball as a kid, and I didn't make my freshman team my freshman year in high school, and so I spent all that summer and that fall between freshman and sophomore year putting in a lot of time and effort to try to get ready to try to make the basketball team at my high school. And on October 19th of 1979, which was actually 3 days before there were basketball tryouts, I went to school that day and I had experienced a little bit of back pain and didn't think much of it, because a week prior to that, I actually had just gotten a physical and a clean bill of health. And so I didn't think much about what was happening. And over a 24-hour period, I ended up in the emergency room at a hospital and later diagnosed with a spinal aneurysm that had impacted my spine and left me a T6 paraplegic. And I can remember it like it was yesterday, and I still wasn't sure what was happening in that whole process, because I'm thinking I have a virus or something, because I literally had just been given a clean bill of health. And so I'm thinking this is going to pass and I'm going to be okay because I'm ready to go and I'm excited about hopefully making this basketball team. Well, that didn't happen. And some 38, 39 years later now, I have a great story of victory and wins along the way. And at the time, as a 15-year-old, I think that it, because of my family and faith, they really helped guide me through that period. And it wasn't, it was almost like we just continued to transition and continue to live with the expectation that, you know, everything's going to be all right. And that's kind of how I, as I look back at that, you know, how that event happened. And as traumatic and tragic as it was, having your support of your family and friends and your faith really helps in those situations.
Yeah, it most certainly does. And, you know, and as a, it happening while you were a teen, I mean, you know, it's those years that are so formative, you know, for a young man. And, you know, also the fact of the basketball aspect. And, I mean, it's just one of those cases where many, you know, many a teen would find it really devastating to move forward. But like you say, you know, that with, you know, family faith and that can help, you know, kind of guide
right.
you that. So now you never lost the passion for the game, correct? You went on to coach?
Yeah, I never stopped playing. It was interesting for me. I love the game so much, and I tried to follow it as much as I could. And when I went to college, I was introduced to wheelchair basketball, something I had never seen before. And I was a little hesitant to get involved in that. I had some of my own personal biases that I had to deal with in terms of learning how to get along with people that actually now looked like me. I was the only one in my high school in a wheelchair, so I didn't know how to interact with other people that were in wheelchairs or had physical challenges. So that was a bit of a struggle for me, honestly. But that getting involved in wheelchair basketball really was the beginning of me finding out that, you know, your obstacles don't redefine you, they just redirect you. And so my passion and love for the game was always there. I was just now having to find a new way to feel that passion and to fulfill what I wanted to do with the game. And wheelchair basketball was the start of that. And from there, I began coaching basketball, summer leagues, rec leagues for the bank I worked at, eventually doing some high school basketball and making it all the way to Duke University and ultimately some USA basketball. So that love never dies. That passion never died. I just had to figure out another way to stay active in the game.
Yeah, you know, and that's great because one of the things I think that happens, you know, if some people experience an obstacle or something that is kind of forces them to have a certain passion and something happens that could easily dampen that passion or even to have the person shy away from that. I mean, it easily could have been where you would have shied away from it, you know, I mean, not really realizing that the path that you thought you were going to take with it wasn't going to be the path, you know, and rather than being redirected like you were, I mean, there's also a possibility that, you know, that you let that passion die. Not you, but I mean, in general, people who have that kind of struggle. So, I mean, it seems that, you know, it's kind of like you met that challenge head on and, you know, didn't let it dampen that passion.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't know any better. I think one of the things that was a benefit of being so young, you know, when you're 15 years old, you haven't lived enough life to really have some of the negative impacts that life can have on you and change some of your optimism and all that kind of stuff. I was still young enough where, you know, I believed I could still do something with this. I wasn't sure how it was going to work out, but I still loved the game. And if that meant just going to watch games, and that then so be it. But I think that you're right. I think sometimes we just let situations in life destroy our passion. You know, I tell people this all the time is, don't let a nightmare destroy your dream. You know, you still keep your dream and you dream big. And there's going to be some things along the way that are going to try to deter you. But if it's really inside of you and it's something that you're truly passionate about, you determine when that's over, not your circumstances. And that's really what I think was instilled in me by my parents as a young man, is that, you know, you always keep striving and keep your goals in front of you. Don't change your goals because of obstacles. Just make sure you get there. If you have to go around or through or under the obstacle, make sure you keep your goals in front of you.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and the obstacles so many times paralyze people, you know, in the sense that it stops them from continuing on. You know, and the idea of going around, over, under, you know, an obstacle sometimes seems daunting, you know, for some people. But, you know, I liked, you know, there was from your book the idea of, you know, let's see, I want to get the exact wording. It's about an obstacle doesn't, the idea was redirecting, you know, an obstacle, use an obstacle to redirect, you know, what you're doing.
Yep.
And, you know, that's, I think sometimes people, you know, fail to realize that, you know, if you're on a path that, you know, maybe is not the optimal for you, that sometimes obstacles happen to get you on course and or create a course or a path, a new path. And it seems, you know, that you know, that's very much what you did with your situation.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. I think sometimes if people will understand that the obstacle that you're facing or the adversity that you're dealing with, it didn't kill you. And the fact that it didn't, because it wasn't designed to do that. It may, like you say, be designed to help you understand where you're supposed to navigate and how you're supposed to get there. It was never meant to destroy you. It's like when you're driving somewhere, you get behind a semi, all of a sudden you can't get around it. You're still heading to where you're going. It's just going to take you a little bit longer because now there's something in front of you that you can't necessarily get around quickly. And I think once you embrace that and you put that adversity in that situation, I call it in your recipe for success, then you start to have a story to tell. And you also, quite honestly, you feel a sense of accomplishment once you start to advance and move forward. And once you start that, you build more confidence, and, you know, all of a sudden, everything seems possible to you.
Yeah, very much. So now, the title of your book is called Undress, From Paralysis to Purpose. So, you know, one of the things that I always find interesting is to find out why an author chose the title that they did. So would you mind letting us know why you chose that title?
Absolutely. Getting Undressed, From Paralysis to Purpose. Getting Undressed was a situation that I dealt with when I was in the rehabilitation center, learning how to, you know, redo everything. Because once you lose the ability of your legs, you've got to relearn everything. You know, just all the stuff that you did, now you have to learn how to do that without walking. And so I remember the day that I was taught how to get dressed. And I was so excited about that because that was some independence now, and I learned how to redo that. Well, that evening they had an emergency in the rehabilitation center, and no one came to help me get undressed. And I'm sitting in my room, and I'm like, man, you know, I want to go to bed, or I'm going to sleep in this chair. What am I going to do? And so I was thinking, I'm like, well, you know, I got to figure out how to get undressed. And so that night, it took me a while to figure it out, but I learned how to get undressed that night. I got myself in bed, and that was, for me, all about independence now, kind of a rebranding of myself, and thus came the title of the book, Getting Undressed, then From Paralysis to Purpose. And so from that moment of learning how to get undressed, I began to understand that there was a lot more that I was going to be able to do, and that I was going to be able to have some independence, and I was going to be able to have some impact. And that's how the title of the book came about.
Wow, that's great. Now, one of the things kind of in that mode, you know, the fact that, you know, that you were able to figure it out, sense of independence. And that coming from the experience that you've had to have people help you. So how you know, for some people, asking for help can be some people just don't like to ask for help. So in your case, you know, there were times obviously you needed that help. And so, but then there was also that drive for independence. So how would you, you know, for people listening who maybe are struggling right now but are a little bit reluctant to ask for help, what would you say to them, you know, to maybe help them get over that, their resistance for that?
You know, everybody needs help at some time with something. It may not be as obvious as it was for me or for someone that may have physical challenges or something like that, but everybody gets help. And I think that if we understand that no one makes it on their own, there is no self-made person. Everybody got some help at some point. I used to think that a form of humility was to deny help and say, well, thank you, but I can do this by myself. I learned over time that true humility was learning how to receive help, and that when people want to help you, they're trying to move you forward. And ultimately, that was my goal. If they can help make my life easier, help me get something done quicker, faster, then you know something? I'm the better for that, and I need to be open to receiving that. And I think that really does help a lot. The older I get, the more receptive I even became to help. Because as we all season, some things become more difficult for us to do. And so the ability to have your hands open and say thank you for doing that for me and receiving it, I tell you what, it makes the quality of your life a lot better.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and I'm with you in that season, asking for more help. So, you know, and I think, you know, the being humble and asking for help when necessary and you know, expressing gratitude for when it is given. You know, to me it seems that that the process of asking for and giving help is the kind of a relationship that builds it kind of strengthens gratitude, the idea of gratitude, and it strengthens the spirit. To me, it seems it strengthens the spirit of both.
Yes, I agree 100% with that. And it was interesting once I began to understand that it was okay to get help, and it didn't make me a weak person or a loser or anything like that. It also changed my view about helping others, and one of the things that helped me turn my whole situation around was to take the focus off me and put it on someone else and take a break from my problems to help other people's with theirs. And it became a kind of reciprocating thing for me. And you talk about the gratitude, the sense of gratitude and gratefulness, and seeing the happiness in the face of others that were now receiving help as well. Man, that was worth its weight in gold. Just the best feelings ever.
Yeah, that's, you know, being of service to others, I think is just so undervalued. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if you put the focus on helping someone else, you know, for many people who are, you know, experiencing adversity, that, you know, it seems that, you know, if you get into that mode of that giving mode and focusing on someone else and helping someone else, then it lifts you up. But also, one of the things I've found when I've done volunteer work is that I always ended up feeling so much more grateful for my life when I've helped someone who has less than I, you know, or was in need and something that I could provide just because I was able to provide it, you know. And it seems that, you know, it makes your life better, as well as the one you're helping, but it also makes your life better. So if
it really, it really does.
I'm sorry. I'd say if you're feeling, struggle, adversity, all kinds of, that type of drag, go out and help someone.
Yeah, absolutely. There are actual scientific studies that say when we serve and help other people, it lowers blood pressure and sugar count and all that kind of stuff. I didn't know that until I was studying it recently. And so that's a byproduct of it. That's not a reason to do it, but that's one of the benefits that come to you. And once you realize, I remember being in the rehabilitation center, and when I got there, I saw people whose conditions were so much worse than mine. People that had brain injuries and all different kinds of things that couldn't move anything. And it changed my perspective. I think how we see a thing really can impact how we address it and how we approach it. And once I start to see that I wasn't as bad off as I thought I was, it changed how I attacked what I was dealing with. And also that compassion kicked in to try to serve and help others.
Yeah, I would think of that. I mean, to me, it's just perspective. It's amazing that our life can change and how we view our life, how we experience our life. It's just amazing how it can change simply by changing our perspective of our life and of the life of others.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the things that, speaking of giving, is that one of the things that I noticed is that, I believe in it's a talking point for your book, is that the idea of being the most giving person in the room, not the smartest.
Yes.
Competing and giving is a race worth running. So, to me, that's... I love the idea of competing and giving. let's see who can do more.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And having been fortunate to get graduate degrees and all that kind of stuff, and you're competing and all that, but then once you realize that I don't need to be the smartest guy in the room anymore, but I would like to be the most giving guy in the room. If I can outgive someone in that room, I'm going to be pretty excited about that. And if we could compete at giving to one another and being kind to one another, could you imagine the impact that would have just in your little circle? Sometimes we think we have to change the whole world, but I tried to exercise these principles just in the circle of influence that I had. And I try to win that battle every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when it came time to, making advances in your recovery, and as you went through, your goals, achieving those goals, did you set yourself small incremental goals along the way? One of the things I think some people believe is that, if they're going for a goal, they have to go big. There's either go big or go home kind of thing. And so what would you say to that kind of thought, or, what's been your experience
My experience has been that I have to take it one day at a time. When you're dealing with life-changing events, you need to just kind of deal with the present. And be present in that day and try to win and be victorious on that day. I had a big vision of where I wanted to go, but I knew I couldn't get there all in one bite. And so little victories along the way. I mean, my first victory was getting to go home from the rehab center after 2 months of rehab instead of 6 months. And then my next victory was to graduate from high school. I wanted to make sure I graduated with my class. And so I had all these little steps, then to finish college, and so that I wanted to make sure that I had a plan and a process that was manageable for me, with the big goal way beyond where I was at the moment, but doing these little things along the way. I think you can't do more than you can do anyway, and you don't get more than the day that you have. So you might as well maximize that day and then start the next day where you start. I mean, if that makes sense what I'm saying.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, very much. So now, one of the things also was, you know, taking one of the sayings, you know, from the book is that to take advantage of whatever opportunity you're given. How you handle success will determine how much success you can handle. Boy, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, I've been doing the show for like 7.5 years now, almost 8 years, and people will come to me, you know, wanting to be on the show and, you know, talk about their story or book or whatever, and I'll say, sure, you know, looking at it, it fits into my, you know, the kind of stories or, you know, people I speak with. I say, sure, and, you know, here's the dates, and just let me know, and then they never get back, and I'm thinking, you know, this is just odd, you know, someone seeks an opportunity, gets an opportunity, but passes on it and doesn't do anything about it. And to me, that was always seemed to be the oddest thing, you know, when it came to opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes we miss opportunity looking for a different opportunity, and so and so we miss the one that's right in front of us. And I never underestimate any beginning. No beginning is too small, because you don't know where any of that's going to lead. And so whatever the opportunity is, I see them as all as big and beneficial. I don't see them as small and insignificant. I think everything matters and everything that we do is significant. And so as a result, I want to try to maximize, again, take full advantage of whatever opportunity that is, because I do believe that how you handle that will determine what more you can handle. And if you mismanage that and you mishandle those opportunities, there's no guarantee you get another one. And so I encourage everyone, I don't care what the opportunity is. When I start coaching at Duke University, when I was getting my MBA with the Duke basketball team, when I started off by filling up water bottles and washing laundry. That's how I got started. And I was 28 years old. And I tell you what, I wanted to make sure my Gatorade was the best Gatorade and my clothes were my clothes, they had to be folded the best. And I took pride in that. And then from there, that led to so many other things. And so you just take full advantage of whatever opportunity you have, given your limitations, given restrictions, because everyone has some limitations. Everyone has constraints. But we all have the ability to control how we respond to our situation. Everybody has that ability. And how you respond is up to you. That's not up to anyone else. And so I choose to respond to take advantage of every opportunity that I'm given.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So, well, David, we're about halfway through the show. I want to take just a quick break and do want to invite callers, listeners to call in if they want to ask you any questions. They can call in at 619-789-4359. And then when we come back, maybe we could talk about what kind of challenges in life or some examples that would lead to a feeling of paralysis. What kind of, you know, events that can maybe lead to that feeling, okay?
Absolutely.
Great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And also just another reminder that the podcast is now available free also at TuneIn and also on iHeartRadio. And there are links to both of those platforms on the homepage. So today, my very special guest is David Cooks, and we are speaking about his new book, Getting Undressed, From Paralysis to Purpose. And again, you can find out more about his book and his speaking engagements and much more by visiting David's website, which is davidcooksspeaks.com. And again, there is a direct link to his website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, David.
Yes.
Okay, sir. So, we all experience challenges in life, but it's a kind of a different level, it seems, if it leads to a feeling of paralysis. So, you know, in your work, what kind of life challenges or what kind of gets a challenge from being just something manageable to leading someone into a state of paralysis, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think things such as like a loss of a job, a bad report from a doctor, a failed relationship, you know, a breakup, a divorce, those types of things, they can leave you really feeling like they can leave you feeling less mobile than you were before they happened, because that's what paralysis is. Paralysis affects your mobility. It doesn't necessarily affect all of your ability, but some of your ability. And so those types of life-changing events really can, and it hopefully just temporarily make you have a sense of helplessness and paralysis, because they are so life-changing. But they're not permanent. I think that's one of the things we have to understand, is that for the most part, most things in life they're moving, they're changing, they're not going to stay the same, and you can't stay there. I think sometimes one of the challenges that people really have, and I had to kind of walk through this, is sometimes we stay in that place of pain a lot longer than we need to, and we need to deal with the pain and deal with what it is that's affecting us. But then we need to make a commitment to move forward. One of the things I mentioned in the book is that, you know, we're not supposed to live or drive, for that matter, looking in the rearview mirror all the time. It's great to see where we've come from, but we need to be focused more about where we're going. And I think sometimes we'll get stuck looking in that rearview mirror, and that gives us a real sense of paralysis. The unknown, what's gonna happen next, fear, all of those types of things can help bring a sense of paralysis to anyone, and those are the things you have to fight.
Yeah, I can, the idea of it not being permanent, or, you know, this too shall pass kind of, you know, sometimes when you're in the middle of that experience, it doesn't seem like, you know, it's temporary or transitory, but it is important to recognize that is the case.
You hit on something that I think is so true. Sometimes when you're in the matrix, you can't see. I mean, because you're right in it, you know. And on the border of my book is a quote that says, "Your ability to endure is always greater than your willingness to endure." And what I meant when I wrote that was, you can get through much more than you could ever imagine. You may not want to, but if you start, you will get through it. And so your ability to get through things is so much greater than your willingness. That the human will is an amazing thing that we have. And so you are able to, you're able to get through it. Like you said, when you're in it, sometimes you may not think it, you may not see it, but that's where you need some people on the side encouraging you and cheering you on. And also that goes back to those small victories we talked about before, where you begin to identify little things that you can win in the midst of your circumstance. Because for most of us, a lot of times our circumstances won't change, so we need to change in the midst of our circumstance so that we can learn how to deal with that.
Yeah, very much. Now, the book was Paralysis to Purpose, so I kind of want to talk a little bit about purpose. Let's see here. You talked about family and faith as being, you know, instrumental in being able to guide you, you know, through the particularly those initial that initial state, and that also you redirected your passion. You know, your passion stayed there, but you redirected the efforts to express that passion. So when it comes to purpose, for you, how did you discover your purpose? I mean, was it your own, you know, kind of reflective self that was able to do that, or was that too also with family and faith that purpose became clear?
Yeah, the purpose part was more from an individual standpoint for me. What I began to realize over time, and it took me some time to kind of figure this out, is that people were watching my life. I didn't know they were watching my life and how I was dealing with my own circumstances, and they were finding inspiration and motivation from me. I didn't know that. When I began coaching, I began to realize that I think I was gifted to reach and connect with people. And it was easy for me to do, and it was easy for me to have an impact. And I began to kind of see, okay, well, I'm pretty good at this. I can teach a little bit. I can communicate really well. And ultimately, for me, I wanted to make somebody else's life better. That was like my purpose in life, was like, if I can help somebody else, because I had been helped so much myself. And over time, I began to just realize that I was gifted to reach people. And we all can touch people, but some of us have a gift to do those things. And I just personally believe that your purpose is tied to your natural giftings. And it should be something that you enjoy doing, that you have to work at it to perfect it, but it comes naturally for you to do, and it's something that is very fulfilling and has nothing to do with money. It has absolutely nothing to do with money. But there is a fulfillment that you get from it. And for me, I found this out through coaching, and I start to hear back from former players and parents about the impact I was having on their lives as families and individually. I didn't really know that I was doing that at the time. And that really catapulted me into being more intentional about looking for opportunities to make people's lives better. And that took me from the state of paralysis as a 15-year-old to where I am today, to purpose, and trying to make sure that I'm doing something intentionally to make other people's lives better. And that's the reason I wrote the book. I wanted to have something inspirationally to give people hope, to say, look, here's some challenges I've had. Here's some of the ups and the downs, and I want you to be inspired when you read this. I want you to know that there's hope when you read this. And sure, I can talk to you about teamwork and leadership and communication and all those things along the way. But more importantly for me was trying to get people to understand, love what you do, find out what it is that you're gifted to do, and develop that. And when you develop that, I think that purpose comes right alongside of that, and then you can have a really, really happy life.
Yeah, that's a great way of bringing purpose into clarity, you know, because right now, I mean, I know a lot of folks who are working at a job that they don't, that just doesn't bring them that joy and fulfillment, and feel that there is a purpose for which they're not, you know, fulfilling, that they're not, you know, kind of working toward. And, you know, and for some people, it's, if you're in the day-to-day 9-to-5 routine, sometimes it's hard to, you know, step aside and think, you know, what is my purpose? But like you say, if you find what you are gifted with, you know, what comes naturally to you and what makes you happy, you know, those two areas are a great place to start to look for that purpose. And then my guess is that when you recognize this in yourself, then your decisions about, you know, what you were going to do every day or what kind of opportunities, well, you can say you don't pass any opportunity, but what kind of tasks that you would do, it becomes easier to live your life of purpose if you once you recognize what that is.
Yes, you live on purpose for purpose. And so then you, like I said, it does make it easier, and it does make your choices easier. And, you know, I was coaching and on the side as I was a businessman. And so eventually I had to make a decision about that. And I was fortunate enough to be able to transition into another career that used my skill sets. And that's one of the things that I really do believe, is that wherever you are, you know, whether you're in the corporate arena, education, whatever, your skill set's going to manifest. And it's going to show up wherever you are. And how you best use that now, and how you use that for your purpose, is the challenge. And so you're absolutely correct in terms of, once I kind of got some clarity that this is really what I'm supposed to be doing, it eliminated some of the wasting of time that I had before. I became a lot more efficient and more focused on what I wanted to do, and I was willing to make the sacrifices necessary to fulfill that purpose. And that, to me, has been just one of the greatest things I could have ever done.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, how would you define, or what's the relationship between success, what someone would term as success, or experience as success, and purpose? Are the two? Is there a relationship between the two?
I don't think you can have real success or fulfilled success without fulfilling your purpose. I think that we have defined success a lot in terms of accomplishments that are tangible that we can see, but for me, that success comes from within, and it's that sense of gratitude that you get that, again, is not about money or anything like that, but it's this fulfillment that you get for what you're doing. And that's not to say that I'm opposed to wealth or anything like that, because I'm not. But that doesn't become the measuring stick. For me, the measuring stick for me from a purpose standpoint was the impact that my life was having on someone else. Because when it's all said and done, you know, I don't care how many deals I've done in the business world and all that kind of stuff, none of that stuff is going to go on a tombstone. What people are going to remember is the lives that I touched and the people that I impacted. And I take that part of my purpose very seriously. And along the way, you know, I work and pay bills and buy things just like everyone else. And so I think that hollow success does not include purpose. Full success does. And I think that's two different things there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, when we talk about success, also one of the things that is that naturally occurs is that sometimes one will fail, or one's attempts at, you know, certain activities or businesses or relationships, sometimes things fail. So, what is your perspective of failure? You know, is failure really failure, or is it yet another redirection?
Well, you know, first of all, I think it's impossible to live life without failing at something. So let's just put that out there. And since that's the case, then that can't stop you from getting to your destiny. You're going to have to figure out a way to take that failure and turn it into a learning opportunity. You got to embrace it. You got to learn from it. And then you got to kind of get yourself back in line. I think that there's nothing wrong with failing. You're not a failure. You may have failed at a thing, but you learn from that and you keep moving. I think that sometimes we're afraid of failing, and that paralyzes us sometimes, and it keeps us from moving forward or trying things. But I have failed at a lot of things in life. But again, it didn't kill me. It didn't take me out of here. So that must mean I have to use it for my benefit. And I think if we just grow, be open to growth from every situation that we're in, whether it's a winning situation or a losing situation, we need to grow from that and, again, continue walking on that path, because I don't know of anyone who's been on a path in life that hasn't had any failures. I don't know of anyone like that. Some of the most successful people in the world. I love the Colonel Sanders story about Kentucky Fried Chicken, how nobody would eat his chicken for years and years and years. And he was denied and denied and denied. And he kept at it, though, because he believed he had something. And, you know, the rest is history for him. And so I think that's how I look at failure also. I think that if you haven't failed at something, then you really haven't tried hard enough at something. Let me say it this way. You may have dreamed too small if you haven't failed. You got to have big dreams. And the bigger your dream, sometimes you're not going to always be successful. So if it's within your reach to do, that's really not a dream. That's easy. But go beyond that. And when you do that, you know something? You might fail at it, but you know what? You're going to be further along than you were based on going for something that you're sure you can get done.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, one of the things I noticed is from your website is that you work in the area of leadership, keys to effective leadership or servant leadership or topics that you speak about. In your opinion, what are some of the qualities that make an effective leader?
Okay. I would say that there's seven that I talk about, but I'll give you the top three that I think are pretty important. One is character. You can't underestimate the importance of a person's character. Nobody wants to follow or be led by somebody that's not a good person. That just eliminates you, period, from being an effective leader. The other thing that's important, I think, is to be competent. And I don't mean competence in terms of technical expertise. I'm talking about knowing how to reach people and understanding people and learning what buttons that are necessary to push to get people to be their best selves and to produce the most they can. And then that third thing that is pretty important in that is communication. You've got to be, and part of communication, and the biggest part that I think we all fail at sometimes, myself included, is listening. You know, listening is not waiting to speak, because that's what a lot of us do. You know, we need to learn how to listen and glean from each other so we can grow. And then also, how do I best communicate with you? For some people, it's email. For some people, it's texting. Some of us still like to talk, and so we do that too. And so those are three of the things that I think are really important. It takes courage to be a good leader because sometimes you have to make difficult decisions. You know, one of the things I disliked most about coaching high school basketball was having to make cuts, having to tell a young man that you worked hard, but, you know, you just don't fit into what we're doing here. And that was hard. Those were tough conversations. But they were conversations that had to be had. So you've got to be able to, you've got to have courage if you're going to be a good leader. And you got to be willing to change. you know, we talked about being open to growth. I think some of the best leaders in the world are those who are willing to adapt and are willing to change. And because people want to be led. They don't want to be bossed around. Nobody likes to be told what to do. They like to be led. And so leadership really isn't about a title or position or being in charge. It's about impacting another person's lives. I don't think anyone wakes up with the idea that, well, you know what, I think I'm going to be a leader. I don't think that's how that works. I think you evolve into that because you had the ability to help make other people's lives better. You've been able to solve problems. You've had some confidence. You're competent about things. You're a good communicator. You've got some compassion in there too. And, you know, all of those things, when you put that together, and you got to be a team player too. You know, you can't be a leader without being a good teammate. There's nothing worse than a bad teammate. And all of those put together, I think, put you on the way to being a really good leader. And whatever capacity that is, and that, again, is not title-driven, but it's based on opportunities that present themselves for you to step in and help solve problems and make other people's lives better. To me, those are the best leaders in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, speaking of, you know, making tough decisions, you know, in the news of the last couple of days about the head of GM having to cut, you know, close plants, lay off people, and, you know, and doing it because of an alignment, a realignment, and our focus, business focus. You know, that took a lot of courage, and, you know, she's getting a lot of flack from everywhere. But, you know, keeping the company's vision required some very tough decisions, very unpopular decisions.
Absolutely. And that's part of the responsibility of leadership, especially when you have ascended to a point of leading an organization like that, being the head coach, being the person in charge. You've got a lot more responsibility, and how you do those things becomes important. How you make those tough decisions, how you communicate those tough decisions, because you can do it in a way where people know it's not personal. Because once it becomes personal, then you got a whole nother fight on your hand. And so the successful leaders are ones that are able to not make these decisions personal and still understand who's on the receiving end of the decisions that you're making and how can you make this the best situation you can for them, even though it's a bad situation. How do you do that? Those are some of the challenges that leaders face all the time.
Yeah, and, you know, like with that example you gave about cutting a young man from the team, and that it wasn't that he didn't, you know, he wasn't up to it. It was just that, you know, it didn't fit in to what you were putting together. So, I mean,
right.
You know, it didn't demean or, you know, kind of attack, you know, the individual. I mean, it was more, this is the team, you know, the vision we see for the team, and you know, it you just don't fit into that particular vision. So, in that sense, you really took it away from being what could have been taken as a very personal whack, you know, on their part.
Yep, and that's what, you know, I would always tell the young men, I would talk to them about, you know, what is it you like to do? I would try to find out, are there other avenues that I can help put them in? Because I think one of the big responsibilities of leadership is to identify opportunities to put their workers and coworkers in or teams in to make them the most successful. So since this wasn't the right fit for the young man, I'm looking to see if there's something else that he can do. Is there another sport? Is there another activity based on his skill set so that he can maximize himself? And again, that goes back to, it's not just about me and my team. It's about the individuals that I'm working with. Because if they max out, I'm going to be pretty good too, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, guys, this has really been a great conversation, David. What do you hope that readers will take away from reading Getting Undressed?
You know, I think the one thing I hope that they take away is that there's nothing that's too hard for you to overcome, and that you can still be successful in the face of very bad odds, and that as long as you're breathing, there's an opportunity for you to be great and to make a difference. And if they get that from this book, that would be the greatest inspiration of all. There are many other things in the book, but to have to tell people that, you know, some you can make it and you can be successful and you can have an impact on somebody else. If they get that from this book, then it's been worth writing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it would be a great book for the holidays, for, you know, for hope, you know, and faith for people to, you know, have an optimistic view over the holiday season. That would be, it would be a great gift. So for listeners out there, if you're looking for a book, go ahead and pick it up. So, well, thank you, David. I really appreciate your time today.
Well, I'm honored to have been with you, and again, thank you so much for this opportunity and allowing for me to share my story and also my book.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been David Cooks, and we've been talking about his book, Getting Undressed, From Paralysis to Purpose. Again, you can find out more about David's book, also all kinds of things, his speaking engagements, by visiting his website, which is www.davidcooksspeaks.com. Again, davidcooksspeaks.com. And again, there is a direct link to his website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again...
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.